All right, it's been a great show so far. We had Jerry Crum during the Wheel of Misfortune. We found out that the grappler is sliding into the DMs of Cristiano Ronaldo.
Why is it called the Wheel of Misfortune? We're going to change the name. I'm going to do some editing. We're going to take a trip to the Overdrive State Fair and spin the wheel.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
It's not the Wheel of Misfortune. It's all positive. It's all positive. It's the Overdrive State Fair.
I think Misfortune is the greatest, because that's our group in a nutshell. It's not Wheel
of
Fortune.
But it's like there's no doom and gloom. It's like Jerry Grum. It's fun things.
I know, but it's not about doom and gloom. It's about being the alternative, universe. That's a Wheel of Fortune. You know,
that's what
Wheel of Fortune is Pat Sajak and Vanna White and everyone. And for us, it's like three gritsters sitting on your screen talking about it's the Wheel of Misfortune.
It's Jerry and Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
We're all losers.
Like, it's just not something anyone really wants to be a part
you're
of.
You're right. I get it now. I'm glad you explained
even
it, because
even
be
if it's
called that.
But even if it's positive storylines, because there are lots in it, I just still believe the misfortune is the, like, that's the hook.
That's the hook for me. Yeah. So anyway, listen, it's always, everything's on the table. We know how it works here. We can discuss and we'll see where it goes. Whoever thought we'd be doing this to begin with? I mean,
exactly.
We just did 15 minutes of Jerry Crum.
Not doing it every week,
weekly. And we, like, this is what's coming up this hour. Jerry Crum's After Dark.
Generally on sports radio, if you try to do a Jerry Crum segment, there's an email with a Zoom meeting scheduled ASAP
at 5:30 in the afternoon, the primetime spot of sports radio.
And Jerry Crum, PI, investigative journalist, is on the docket.
On the case and trying to solve the mysterious case of many different situations. But we'll get to it a little bit later on, so we look forward to that. And I saw, again, pitchers and catchers reporting, and your boy Alejandro Kirk is, I wouldn't say he's in good shape. He's in the same shape, and that's the shape that we're looking for. We want him to just be 5'4", about 210, and hitting bombs, He's in the running. We know that Danny Jansen's going to start behind a plate, but either your guy, Reese McGuire, if he keeps his head on straight and doesn't, park anywhere in the greater Dunedin area, he's got a shot at getting that job, or Alejandro Kirk. But it's good to have Alejandro and the boys back in our lives.
Grit grinder.
Yes.
I love that guy.
Grit grinder.
I love how you describe it, too. He's about 5'4", 210. Like,
that's the parameters.
Low center of gravity.
The lowest of centers of gravity.
He's the ultimate grit grinder, that guy.
Yeah.
Who is way off topic here, but who's the shortest baseball player to ever play? Like, that, there's probably a guy who's in that range.
Yeah, I'm trying to think on the fly. Like, Pedroia was
small. Like, off the top
of
your head.
Kirk is small. Like
the guy who punched...
in Houston.
Oh,
Odor.
Yeah. Odor. Odor, I think, might be 5 feet flat.
What? Are you serious?
I think there's...
He punched Joey Bats. Joey Bats is probably, 6 feet?
That's
he is.
That's the best thing you've ever
Bats
said.
Is,
5 feet
you're
tall.
You're right. You're right. Odor is—he's got to be 5'7" or 5'8". You're talking Altuve.
Altuve is short.
Sorry,
5'4".
Altuve.
No, Odor is who knocked out.
Odor is the
out,
guy who punched.
Threw the bomb
off
Bautista, but Odor just
said Houston.
He's
not 5 feet tall. He's not.
Do you
five
think
feet.
There's ever been anybody in baseball under 5 feet?
Are you? I don't know. That's my question.
I could
it's
see
a
that
ridiculous
120
question,
years ago.
But
do you think some carny showed up to spring training and said, "I want to play"?
I'm just saying, everyone comes in all shapes and sizes. There is a stat out there of the smallest player to ever play the game. Like, I could think Nathan Gerby is a very small NHL player.
He's not 4'9", Jamie.
I'm not saying that.
4'11 and three quarters.
Who is the shortest player who ever played baseball, who played in the NHL?
I'm going to say there has been someone that has played baseball.
No.
In Major League Baseball that is 5'2 or shorter. 5'2 is the line.
You
five
just
two.
Said under 5 foot.
I know. Listen, 4'11 is really short.
It's very
really
circus there are, carny.
There
no,
are not,
not
a lot of men around the world, shorter than 5 feet. But 5'2 is the line. I'll go under. I think someone's 5'1 and three quarters. like 110 way, years ago, playing for, you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Well, you
or
obviously Googled it. Like, I have Grapplers. Not. Grapplers coming over the top saying, look at this guy. He was 4'11", 212 pounds.
No access to any information. None whatsoever.
Well, I'm reading it quickly. David sent it to me, but it's a guy named Eddie Gadel or something like that. Yeah, you're right. Born 1925. Died 1961. Smallest player to appear in Major League Baseball game. Standing
Did he get there
feet.
Legitimately? Like, I feel like we're going to go down a dangerous road here and,
yeah, I know,
and
it's
start
Wikipedia.
Referencing someone who won a contest or, you know,
yeah, no,
like something like that. But
we've got to be careful with it. But it says he's right. 3 feet 7 inches. But I don't know about that.
There's no way that's real. There it is up on TSN, too. There's
you
no
don't
way
think that's real.
That can't be real. 3'7"?
That looks like that looks at my son. It looks like that. My 3-year-old looks like that as far as age.
Yes.
Age-wise. Yeah. Yes.
There's no way three. That's a publicity stunt. Like,
you think so?
There's no chance that guy was. What's he hitting? What's he hitting in the majors? And what is the strike zone? Like, honestly.
I don't know, but I don't know why I thought that, but you mentioned, like, grit grinder, 5'4", 210. I'm like, 5'4" is really, you know, that's on a shorter scale, right? And like for baseball, because you see, guy Randy Johnson was how tall? 6'6"?
He was 6'10".
6'10".
A Randy Johnson sliding curve would hit that cat right in the top of the head. Like,
yeah,
hit
his strike
the top
zone.
Of his skull.
Listen, I am totally ignorant to it. I do not know the backstory. I've never heard that name before.
Neither am I. I just, like, my point being is it's kind of funny because I was like, it would be, you know, neat to see. I want to know who the shortest NHL player who ever played an NHL game is.
Dregs might know.
Dreger might. I mean, he's a fountain of information and trivia. Here he is, our TSN Hockey Insider, Darren Dreger. Do you have any idea who would be your guess, like the shortest NHL player? Not even a name. What do you think the height would be, Dregs? Shortest player.
Like, obviously, be less than 5'6", so I'm going to say 5'5".
And that might be Brian Gionta's little brother.
Oh, maybe Steven Gionta.
That sounds
right. Or Steve Correa.
Oh yeah, yeah. Paul Correa's younger brother or maybe his older brother. But I remember. Yeah, Steve Correa was a small player.
I'd say 5'5". How tall was Fleury? Theron Fleury was what?
5'6". 5'6". Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Marty St. Louis wouldn't be much taller. Would he be 5'7", maybe 5'8"?
Yeah, mm-hmm. In that range.
I'm thinking Nathan Gerby is a guy that comes to mind who is
right. –
there was a picture of him recently, I thought, with, like, Chara standing next to him, and it was like, you know, it was Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, basically.
Well, that picture of Aaron Judge standing beside Jose Altuve – is a famous one where Judge is 6'9 or 6'10 and Altuve, I think, is 5'5", 5'6".
Yeah, he's short.
Right.
And I mean, they're both great players. Both MVP caliber players. Altuve's won one. So yeah. I guess there it goes. It doesn't really matter.
So I have a short, tall story, and I'll keep it short, but it dates back to Zdeno Chara arriving in Ottawa in the, I guess it was the Wade Redden trade, right, with the New York Islanders. So I'm doing Ottawa Senators hosting at the time. So we go to interview Zdeno Chara between the first and second period, the intermission. And the camera guy had like a milk box there for me to stand on to do the interview. And so I'm standing on it. I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. He's 6'9", and on skates, he's 7 feet. Big Z came over. He looks down at the box. He looks up at me. He goes, "This isn't a circus. What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Wow, I'm trying to explain. You know, I'll have my arm will be stretched and I'll be on my tippy toes trying to hold the microphone." He goes, "I don't care." He goes, no, get rid of that thing." And I had to, he was nice enough about it, but he basically said, "I'm not doing the interview if, you know, everybody knows you're not 6'3". So,
oh, see,
what are you trying to do here?
I like that. So he was coming at you like, you're not getting anywhere based on my size. Like, everyone knows I'm a big dude,
right.
So you can't claim to the world that you're tall, too. I'm not going to accept that.
Well, and he goes, "Hey, I'm 6'9" plus skates. I mean, hey, interview me the way you interview everybody else or don't bother." So I did the interview standing on my flaps and looked like an idiot. But we stayed true to Zdeno Chara and TV.
I love it. That's great.
I love it, too.
We haven't brought up this story out of Arizona. And we have, I mean, we haven't talked about the Arizona Coyotes really at all this
right.
year. And, you know, I'm in a way so sick and tired of the organization being what they are because we have been talking about it for 10 or 15 years.
Tiring, man.
It's just every year it's a new owner and there's more problems and people aren't getting paid. And there was a really compelling and riveting and well-documented story in The Athletic. Katie Strang wrote it, just detailing you know, what's going on down there with ownership and how employees feel about it. And you're as connected as anyone, Dregs. I mean, what has been the response league-wide, and how do you feel about what's going on in Arizona for the, you know, what feels like 400th time in a row?
Yeah, well, I'm on board with you guys there. And trust me, I've covered more than my share of tough Arizona Coyotes stories, including the not so recent one where John Chaika and the group were involved in the draft schmozzle and then ultimately, you know, the demise of John Chaika and then the fact that, you know, he's since been effectively exiled, suspended by the National Hockey League. So I've covered my share to be sure. You know, as you guys have said, and I will echo your sentiments on this. I mean, this is terrific reporting by Katie Strang in The Athletic. You know, it's not like she picked up the phone and called some angry ex-employee, and this individual just spilled their guts. And here's what's going on with new ownership, and this happened and that happened. No, I mean, would you interview 50 people?
Yeah.
And went directly, you know, to ownership of the Arizona Coyotes, and then by extension to general manager Bill Armstrong. You know, there isn't a whole lot of reaction across the league. Because I would think that most clubs are kind of viewing it the same way we are. I don't think that the NHL head office was very happy about it. Obviously, based on the statement of the Arizona Coyotes, they didn't like it. And for me now, it's going to be interesting to see, okay, well, you don't like it. You're threatening legal action. Are you going to follow through? And if you are, then what about the disclosure opportunities here that come along with it? Katie's never going to disclose sources. But more might be uncovered publicly than ownership of the Arizona Coyotes actually wants out there, to be fair. And then by extension, not a real good look for Bill Armstrong, right? I mean, this is a guy who respected management type, you know, cut his teeth in St. Louis under a very good manager in Doug Armstrong. Probably didn't know what he was getting into, to be fair. But he embraces the opportunity because there are so few general manager jobs in the National Hockey League. I'm guessing that if he had a mulligan on that interview with Katie, his approach would be different because he didn't come across very professional, in my opinion, based on what I read. So that's how we digest it. But I think in the grand scheme of things, there's not a lot of surprise around all of it. But I'll tell you this, guys, you know, you ask any NHL owner, they would support Marullo only because when you look at his net worth, the family's net worth, it's published at $2 billion with a B. $2 billion. So even though there's some stuff going on from a business standpoint that, you know, I'm sure the commissioner's office doesn't advocate or condone, the fact that they've got financial stability operating that organization for the first time since when? Ever?
It's been a long time.
Right.
That's a huge, huge sign of relief to the owners across the National Hockey League who are more than fed up with the league propping up the Arizona Coyotes financially.
And I read the article, Dregs, and I agree. Like when somebody's net worth is got a B in it, then you know there's success, that you know they've got backing. But I mean, that was the thing that kind of took it away from me in the article is the way they conduct business. And that's where, you know, if you conduct business and you have a lot of net worth, but it's like you sign a contract for X amount of dollars. Well, we're not paying that. The minute that it's net 90 days, now we'll start to negotiate on that price. And that's what kind of took it for me, because you're hearing all of these multiple stories coming out of there of signing bonuses weren't paid and late on this and that. Like, you can handle, there's different businesses that work that way. And I think that was their model, and they're trying to bring that to the National Hockey League, where it's different. You know, you've got to be up front. You have to have some transparency and all that. I just think, and again, this is, you know, really just thinking out loud, the NHL had the one fiasco with that one owner. Was it Spano is his name, where he bought the Islanders for like $5,000. It was something crazy. He had no money, and it was a house of cards. That would be the only thing that scares me, is if this guy and his all of his money's net worth is tied up in everything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's actually no cash there. That's what, in your leverage, and you're negotiating this, and you're negotiating that.
Well, they better have learned from
that. That's what scared me from that
case.
Article, reading between the lines. It's like they work a different way.
Honestly, the first thing I thought of was, do we owe John Chayka an apology? Because the hockey world turned on him quick. Did he bail because he said, I'm not working here? Like, this is a disaster.
Yeah, I don't know.
He should have.
Yeah.
But I haven't heard an explanation on that.
Well, you're right. We've never officially or formally been given that explanation other than through sourcing. And, you know, Arizona Coyote sources would tell you, league sources would tell you that it was how John Chayka was trying to terminate an existing contract with the Coyotes that ended up getting him in trouble, right? So what that means, you know, the devices he used, whatever, who knows? John Chayka is probably as happy as any to be out and looking forward to the expiration date so he can get back in whatever in capacity that is. But, you know, I just to revisit this and perhaps wrap it up, I just think that when you issue a statement the way the Arizona Coyotes issued a statement in response to a well-done media report, you better be ready. Better be ready, because how many times historically have we seen a story like this, or, again, a deeply investigated story come out where then all of a sudden 50 turns into 150 people, and some of them are willing to go on record, talk about all the stuff and the crap that was going on and the things they've had to put up with. So if the Marullo family wants to go to war with Katie Strang and the Athletic, then they better be ready, because they may not like what's coming down the pike from other sources that maybe don't want to hide behind the cloak of anonymity. Maybe they come forward and tell their truth, and that might not be good.
Yeah.
Dregs, have you talked to any executives in the league about, like pro-scouting players? I mean, I heard Vertanen's name popping around. Noodles brought him up earlier in the show. I mean, what are people, executives who can't be in the building? I mean, as much as he might need a change of scenery, who's watching him for 4 or 5 minutes, whatever he played the other night, and saying, I got to give him a chance, without getting a real deep dive, close look at him?
Real hard. Oh, real, real hard. And look, that's also not to change conversations, but that's why every manager is pushing, and Mark Bergevin, the most recent to come out to say they got to move the draft. It's because, kids aren't playing, so that matters. But when they are playing, and you can't be in the building, and you can't see these guys, you know, with the naked eye, and actually in other areas, it's next to impossible to cover your...
Okay, Miles, throw it on hold. Well, it's just, I think it's, I can't really hear Dregs. The audio is cutting in and out. We'll see if we can get him back on to answer that, because I want to hear that answer in terms of the draft, too. Like, I heard that maybe they're thinking of the first round, but, you know, moving second through seven beyond the second round to next year or whatever, but... His phone was going wonky.
You're right. I think you have to move it, because these kids, they've had no opportunity to play, and some of them are being sent to the AHL recently. I know of a kid that's playing
in
Austria.
Man.
Like they're just trying. Agents are just trying to find places for these kids to play, and you know these are critical years for development, like critical.
Well, Rasmus Sandin, who was playing, broke his foot last night. Marlins play their first game. He blocks a shot, breaks his foot.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And, you know, it feels almost like a lost season for him, where last year was a lost season. That's going to be almost 2 calendar years where your number one prospect is barely going to play.
Yeah.
What's that going to mean for him? You know,
it is.
Not going to be easy. We'll see with Dregs. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to get him back.
He might have said to hell with us, which is fine.
What I want to ask you guys, Dregs, is who knows what's going to happen. What did you think of the veteran who went on the flying route for Valentine's Day to impress his lady friend. Veteran move or not so good?
I thought it was a hero move. Heroes, I mean, hero can be interpreted every which way, but
so he,
I don't know.
He was a pilot, and he owns a plane. He took his, what, girlfriend and flew her around Toronto or something like that?
Oh, yeah. A heart-shaped pattern to show his affection.
Yeah.
I think it's Rod Langway veteran status.
You like that play?
Yeah, if you got your own
it's a cool
bird.
Play.
Come on.
It's a very cool play. The heart is a bit much. Like, you don't know that when you're flying around. You know, the heart shape.
He flies around.
Pattern. He does fly around. All right, we have Dregs back. Dregs, go ahead in terms of the draft and scouting. We lost you there.
Yeah, sorry. That was a tough one to follow. I gave my wife chocolate and Shoppers Drug Mart chocolate, no less.
Same.
So I'm not flying around in hearts.
No,
what I was saying was, you know, that's why you're getting so much pushback from NHL clubs on wanting to move the draft so that their scouting department can physically put eyes on these kids when these kids are back playing, right? So that you can absorb everything that goes into the game and their play. And, you know, that's got to be the same with some of these younger players. Like Jake Virtanen's, what, 24 years old? Adam Gaudette is a 24-year-old. You know, are they projects? I mean, it feels a little early to label them as that at this point of their career. But every player has a player like Virtanen or Gaudette. And that seems to be what's gumming it up for the Vancouver Canucks. And Vancouver has very specific financial needs. You know, Virtanen's got another year at 255. But it's not just the cap hit, it's the cash payout that matters to the Vancouver Canucks as well. So Benning's going to have to sit tight on this and maybe expect or wait for another injury from a team with interest. And maybe at that point, Virtanen will get a fresh start. But to O's point before we broke up there, I mean, he had a good game on Saturday. And then the next game, he makes a mistake and he gets stapled to the bench and plays under 7 minutes. So that's not helping the player at that point.
No, that certainly wouldn't. Well, we'll see. I mean, we're getting closer to the trade deadline anyway, and hopefully more action and, you know, news will be coming out as we get closer to April 12th. Great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
There's Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider.
See,
go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. I just, if Virtanen was a left shot, I'd have interest for him for the Leafs. Because I think he's a guy who can play in your top nine. He's hard to play against when he's playing. And, you know, you're going to be fishing around, you know, Kyle's been fishing around on guys like, you know, VC and Galchenyuk, and Patan was on the first power play the other day. Like, you know, I would argue that Virtanen would be an upgrade on those players based on the style of play when he's playing.
Because Virtanen's a big discussion about a guy like that, Jamie. What is happening here? Is he not getting the opportunity? I've never seen a coach try to screw over a player because he's playing too good.
No,
so
you're
he's
right.
He's clearly not playing good enough to get an opportunity. And when he does get the opportunity, I don't think that being in the gym is his favorite thing in the world to do. I'm not sure. I'm just guessing. But
right.
He's got to show commitment. And once he gets the opportunity, he's got to make the most of it.
I think he's
Trust
just
me,
too
I've
comfortable.
Been there. I get the deal. He's got to do more.
He's also got a decent ticket. And
that's what I mean. Like, that's what I was talking about. Like, if
concern.
He was a left-handed shot, I'd be looking at him for the Leafs because I think he's a guy who would be an upgrade on the other projects you have in the stable.
I can't disagree with that. I also wonder if Benning, because he took him sixth overall, he feels like he's got to get a price.
Dude, I've been the biggest fan of this guy, Hayes, for years. I'm like, I love this guy. Get him here. Get him somewhere. He skates. He's mean. And then all of a sudden, he just falls off the face
that's
of the earth.
That's the issue. Yeah, inconsistency is, you know, for a team like this in Toronto, too, where they're trying to prove maturity, bringing in a guy like that may not
no
be the greatest
way.
Idea. But I think it's also, will Benning be willing to just say, we've got to move on? Or will he say, I've got to get quality back? And
right.
Because why would teams pay for quality when you're clearly sour on a guy? You're barely
you're right.
playing him.
But I think there's what you do is you look at other organizations that have a Virtanen. A guy that they're, you know, that they've drafted high and they're disappointed in, and
right.
Because everyone has, you know, every organization, they may not have that exact player, but they may have somebody like that
along
in the organization.
Those lines.
I'm sure
yeah.
Jimmy Benning watches Josh Anderson in Montreal, saying that guy competes, he works, he chips in scoring, he's a goal scorer, and our guy is playing 4 minutes a night and he's supposed to be Josh Anderson or a poor man's version of Tom Wilson or something like that, and he's not. He's not that.
Yeah. No, he's not right now. Matt Devlin will join us on the Raptors' win last night. Kyle Lowry's injury, if it continues into tomorrow night, what happens with this lineup? Them going small. A lot to get into with Matty D. We look forward to that. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Jerry Crum after dark in about 15 minutes. We got three more. The boys will be back at it. Magnifying glass, top hat, cigars, ugly personal life. That's what happens with PIs. That's my understanding. Anyway, that's what every movie in history would suggest.
Fast food.
Yeah, it's always horrible diet. You know, someone that just is always hungover. Like, you talk about just a...
Dude, Bruce Willis was in a detective movie where he was sleeping in his car, pissed drunk every night, woke up, like, just put his badge on and went to work.
Was it Nick Nolte, too? Do you remember 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy?
Yeah.
That was... Always that hungover. Was
like, Die Hard 3, Die Hard with a Vengeance, which is a great movie... He is so hungover in that. And there's just no way you would crack that case. Like, there's no way you could be that hungover running around New York, driving around New York. You just couldn't do it.
No.
You know, like McClane, you'd call it, you'd be like, sorry, take it. You know, Storm City, I'll do whatever you want. I'm too hungover. I can't do this.
Bring in Matty. I want to speak with him.
Oh, do you?
Oh,
you want to speak with your guy, Matt Devlin. Okay, here he
Matty
is, the voice
D.
of the Raptors. Back on Overdrive here is Matty D, Matt Devlin. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are the three of you?
No, we're holding good.
We're awesome, man. Well, we had a bit of a situation, Matty D, at the beginning of the show. Hazy B on Monday was like, you know what? Raps just lost to the Timberwolves. He's just down in the dumps. Then they win against Milwaukee, and he's like, no one in the East scares me. So, Matty D.
He's a flip-flopper.
Let me just ask you. Here's the question, Matty D. Which Brian Hayes is real life?
Well, that's a good question. But I think that I think that you have to look at the Eastern Conference. And I will say this, and I said this at the beginning of the year because of the type of year that it is, and very much like probably what you guys would think of the NHL. You never know what this season is going to bring, so everybody get ready for the playoffs and try to be your best self when you get there, which means be healthy, be ready to go. And so I don't think that there's anybody outside of Brooklyn in the East that would scare you. And the one question about Brooklyn, you guys know it. I'm sure you've talked about it. That's defense. Mm-hmm. When will they decide to guard? And quite honestly, for them, probably with about 20 games left in the season, they'll start to really try to hone in on that as they kind of just go through now this process of, you know, who's in the lineup, who's out of the lineup, because that's what Brooklyn has in front of them. As far as the Raptors are concerned, you know, that's one of those games on Sunday night after a six-game road trip where you go 4-2, and then you have Milwaukee twice. You know, you kind of get caught in the middle a little bit going home and taking on, not even home, but going back to Tampa and taking on that Minnesota team. So I think the Raptors, I'm going to go hazy with, you know, I know you're probably, if they lose tomorrow, going to flip again on Friday. I just get that sense, right, yeah. O-Dog? He's going to flip back. Right, Noodles? He's going to flip back, go the other way, you know.
No. Here, let me.
Yes, you are. It's just probably after, you know, the Leafs being up 5-1, you flipped on them after they lost to Ottawa.
Yeah, well, I think they should tank now. I think they should get back into the lottery and go for it, completely redo everything. Naturally, our friend here did not lay on the table all of the commentary from earlier this afternoon.
What did I miss out, Brian?
Well,
go
a couple
ahead
of things.
Explain
One,
to Matty. Go ahead, explain
couple
to
of
Matty
things. D. One, I did say Brooklyn scares me if they defend, just like Devlin just said. Matt just said it. He's right. They have so much talent. If they defend, you should be scared of them. The point I was making was I could see Masai Ujiri just kind of in the weeds sitting there saying, you know what, we could be a player away from going on a run as well because no one scares me in the East outside of Brooklyn. And that is a point I shared on Sunday. I share it based on what happened last night. I think if the big four are healthy. OG coming back last night. He looked great. Siakam, Fred, Lowry. You add another piece. I don't have a name for you. I have a position I'd like to fulfill, but I don't have a name for you. If you're Masai Ujiri, Matty, I could see him sitting there saying, I could get greedy here. We could beat Boston. We could beat Philly in a best of seven. Absolutely you could do that. I think you might need to improve, but that's the point I was making. Not terrified. You add a piece. Why can't the Raptors win a couple of rounds?
Well, what makes this interesting is that there's nobody running away with the field.
Right.
And so just when you think you're back in it, you end up losing a game that you think you should win, but then all of a sudden you break out the small lineup and you defeat Milwaukee. And so you look up and down the Eastern Conference, and I think Masai and Bobby always put themselves in a situation where they believe they're one player away. You know, the question becomes, what is it going to take to get that player? And this is where, to me, this gets a little bit interesting, because we've heard all the rumors, but I don't know if Andre Drummond at $28 million, you're going to have to line up a lot of contracts to get to that. There's not too many horrible contracts out there where, okay, you take this and I'm going to take that. I think very much like Blake Griffin, it could end up in a buyout market. He's already rumored to go to the Los Angeles Lakers. Next season, he's owed $39 million. So it'll be interesting to see what that buyout number is. And I think that Andre Drummond could be headed to that. And if you recall last year, Markieff Morris was bought out by Detroit, eventually signs with the Lakers. Here's an interesting thing with the Raptors. We know that they're going to remain in Tampa for the remainder of the season. They haven't had a tremendous amount of success in the past going out into the buyout market, but this year could be different. And the reason why is no state income tax in Florida, and obviously the weather. And so is this a year where the Raptors, to your point about maybe being one player away, can they add that player through the buyout market? It'll be interesting to see how all that plays itself out, because the trade deadline's not, you know, for another 5 weeks. But that's something just to kind of keep in the back of your mind. No state income tax and the weather. This is where maybe the Raptors are able to do something in the buyout market.
I appreciated what Van Vliet said after the game when he was asked about, you know, the small lineup and whether or not he thinks it can work. And he basically said it better. Right. Yeah, we don't have a choice. This is what we have. And he knows, you know, they started 2-8. They lost to Minnesota. You know, listen, they're not in the most secure position right now with the standings. But I like that comment, and I think it says something also about how they feel about Ananobi and his versatility. They clearly missed him for those 10 games. He didn't play a ton of minutes last night, but he looked pretty good. What did you see out of OG, and where do you see his game going here? Does he still have more growth?
Well, he definitely has more growth, and the growth is consistency, right? Where, you know, great players are defined by night in and night out. Noodles and O-Dog know that, right? Players that show up every single night and produce. Hazy B, do you know about that? Producing everything?
Somewhat familiar from afar. I've read about it. I've read a lot of books on that.
He does it because he was never a pro athlete, Matty D. Continue with the statement.
But if OG is a sort of player that, and I believe that he is, that is a 3-and-D, but then also continues to evolve with his handle, getting to the rim, you know, watch out. They have six players right now that you can tell based upon the rotation that those six are the ones that they trust, inclusive of the five that started and Chris Boucher. And now you're looking for a Bembry who has really picked it up. And what can you find now from Aaron Baines coming off of the bench? And, you know, will this grow with Watanabe coming back at some point? And so to me, you know, it'll be interesting to see what transpires here, because everybody talks about the five position, that they need something there, but there's also the conversation about wing depth and having somebody that's 6'8", 6'9", that has some length in the wing. So that is something potentially you take a look at. But the one thing, and I thought the Raptors played exceptionally well, and you go back to the Boston loss last Thursday, their scheme defensively, I mean, they were outstanding what they did against the big three. It just so happens that Semi Ojeleye and Peyton Pritchard who they wanted to shoot the ball, you know, both had career type of games. So that happens. And last night they did a tremendous job putting multiple bodies on Giannis as well as Chris Middleton. Be interesting to see what happens tomorrow. But, you know, this is a team with that small lineup. When they come out, have the energy, the defensive intensity, watch out. The only one thing I will say is last night, that was a playoff-type rotation, right? And that's where that depth and the conversation about adding a player or two, you know, comes up.
Maddie, Joe Buck came out and said that him and Troy Aikman used to have some cocktails in the press box. I know you or Leo or Jack would never do that. But if you did and you came out with it, do you think Jack Armstrong or Leo Routens would burn your house down for saying that? Because well, that's exactly what I would do if somebody came out and said that.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they pregame, not postgame.
Right. Who cares pre-game. What it was? The fact that he came out pre-game. With it was idiotic.
Loosening yeah, up.
Well, I will tell you from back in the day, and this is when I spent 7 years calling minor league baseball games along with a host of other things. I worked with the St. Louis Cardinals single-A team in Springfield, Illinois. And one of the great joys that I got on off days, I'd drive into St. Louis and sit in the back of KMOX radio booth and listen to the great Jack Buck.
Right.
And he would sit there calling the game, and, you know, they'd have post-game, you know, you had the Budweiser there because obviously it was owned by Anheuser-Busch, and it was just a lot of fun. And then you'd head over to Mike Shannon's restaurant, and he would hold court over there, and the legendary broadcaster for the Cardinals and former third baseman for the Cardinals, Mike Shannon. So, burning down the house, you know, it would be, I wouldn't think that they would do that. I don't think that post-game, yes. Post-game, for sure. You can count on Jack and Leo for sure in post-game, for sure. Yeah, but I'm surprised pre-game. But yeah. They used to say that Pat Summerall used to have a bar in the back in the 80s, 70s, 80s. Used to have a bar in the back of the broadcast booth during football games.
Oh, man, I've you've probably heard way more stories than I have, but a bunch of old school. There's pictures of Harry Carey.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Harry Carey.
That's right. Just Harry, you know, they always said, you know, like a six-pack for every three innings.
Yeah.
Times are different. You know, times are different. You know, I remember awesome. Walking in and watching Jack Buck, and he'd have the Benson and Hedges 100s going. You know, and Mike Shannon had the Viceroys going, and, you know, totally different time.
Oh,
totally
yeah.
Different time.
Just smoking and calling great ball games.
By the way,
tonight.
You guys need to go back and check on your story from earlier. I did hear about Eddie Goodell, and Bill Veeck is a legendary owner, not only of the St. Louis Browns, but also the Chicago White Sox. He was actually the one that hired Harry Carey after he got let go in St. Louis with the St. Louis Cardinals. And there's a whole backstory to it, but it was a publicity stunt. He walked on four pitches, went to first base, and they put in a pinch runner for him.
Okay. But, and he was 3'6", I believe.
Seven.
3'7".
Oh, sorry, my apologies.
Yeah, sorry.
You need sure,
there is a backstory to that, and the commissioner, Happy Chandler, at the time came out with a statement and a ruling following that.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Sure, anyway.
Yeah, at some point. I love it. Look at you. You've got the backstory.
I spent too much time in the minors. You know, there was a lot of time.
Well, you made it now, buddy.
To read up.
You made it now.
That I don't know. That
yeah.
I don't know.
No, you 100%.
To be on your show, for sure. It's always fun to be with Noodles and O-Dog.
Yes.
And you too, AJ.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Matty. We appreciate it, buddy. Keep up the good work. Have a great call tomorrow night, and we'll bother you again down the road, I'm sure of it.
Please do.
You got it. There he is, Matt Devlin, the voice of the Raptors. How cool would that be? Jack Buck back in the day, just hanging out, watching him call a game.
But Harry Carey. Cool. You mentioned that, Harry Carey. Like, there's that
picture. He used to go right into the crowd with no tarp on in his underwear. And just
and this butt's for you.
Listen to his voice. Like,
and this butt's for you.
You barely understand the guy. He's just buckled up in the booth. That's just, that but would that would be awesome. It. Just, I don't know. Harry calls the games. He's, you know, half cut up there. He's smoking darts, and it's all good.
But if you're just a guy that's tinkering in the garage and have the radio on, that's the voice. That's the you want. Yeah, it's like the best.
Yeah, I don't mind it.
A different era where a guy like that, he could pass out between innings, and he wouldn't even get suspended or anything.
No,
you know the team would. What are you going to do?
A little too much last night, Harry. Like, smarten up. We missed the end of the game on the radio. Like,
it was
you're
a
right.
Hot day, and you know it was a doubleheader, and it got the best of Harry.
And this bud's for you.
There he is. Uh-huh. All right, we need more Harry Carey on this show. We'll come back and try to play a little bit more. Jerry Crum is still to come. We've got three more around the circle here. So we'll get to that as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I am on the Maple Leafs home plus tonight. I like the response. I like the lighting with Jerry Crum PI. It's a little bit creepy, but that's the last
Jerry Crum after dark.
Crum after dark. I love it. I'm on the Leafs home plus. Vancouver's paying 220 tonight. I think they've played well lately against Calgary. I think they're going to win tonight, and they're paying 220, and I'll go over the number in the Edmonton-Winnipeg game. Throw down 20. You can score 110. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. ProLine is the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, put your knowledge on the line. Jerry Crum after dark. We love it because we're always in the mood for one more
horny investigation.
I've got a black belt in Aikido and the boots to match.
Welcome. All right, here we go. Jerry Crum after dark. We are being hired, the three of us individually, and you have to crack the case. Okay, you ready for this? We did it earlier. Noodles, we're going to start with you on this one.
All right, let's do it.
All right, Noodles, ticket selling companies have hired you to solve the mysterious case of the ticket stub. Will they still exist post-COVID, or will everything go digital?
I think it's digital. I don't see, unfortunately, the paper. People are going to be able to print off, but I don't see the actual, like,
the ticket itself.
The ticket, you know, which
I'll
is really
that,
cool.
Man. I'll miss the ticket.
But I just don't see it. I see everything's gone digital anyways. People are paying for Starbucks and Tim Hortons and stuff with their phones.
Mm-hmm. There won't be any sports scrapbooks in the future. Yeah, let's just say that.
I agree. I think it's digital. Yeah.
I think you're right, Noodles. All right, I have been hired by the school boards throughout Canada to solve the mysterious case of snow days. Will they exist in the future, or will they turn into online learning days? They better exist in the future. They're going to exist with my kids. I'm going to say that. We talked about history. You just mentioned it there, Jerry Crum, a.k.a. Noodles.
Yeah.
I love the idea of holding the ticket, walking into the rink, you know, walking into the gardens. This may surprise Gino Retta, but I went to the gardens holding a ticket, saying I'm sitting up in the greens and I can't wait for it tonight. I loved it as a kid. We all did. It's a rite of passage as a Canadian kid. Too much snow, we're not going to school. We're not doing school. We're going to toboggan for 6 hours straight. It better survive. None of this virtual online learning days. That's garbage. Better not happen. I will not accept it. That's my investigation.
Fair enough.
Moving on. The final Jerry Crum in the dark PI. Oh, you have been hired by TSN Radio. TSN 1050 has hired you to solve the mysterious case of this Jerry Crum segment. Will it survive and join the rotation of bits in the future?
I don't think it's going to survive. I think it's going to thrive.
Oh.
And this segment could bump out a lot of things. Al's Brothers power rankings could be out the window.
Ooh.
Jerry's percentages could be all of it. It could be all wiped out. And Jerry Crum PI after dark, before dark, like I said, not just going to survive. It's going to thrive.
Now you know how good I really am.
What an investigation. I personally give it a vote of confidence as well. I love it. I love this bit. I think it's a part of the rotation. And Jerry Crum, PI, you just said it. You were staking it out, doing your thing.
That's a full stakeout. Utah, make it two.
Book 'em.
All right, so there you go. I guess it's a part of the rotation. I think Jerry will stick around. Role play will stick around. Confirm or deny is on Tuesdays now at 6 o'clock. We love that. But shout out to Jerry Crum, PI. Good stuff.
Good stuff, Grappler. Good stuff, Mullen,
as always. Kinger, our boy Kinger, because Megan is, you know, all about the Aussie Open right now.
She's mailing it in. She's probably devastated.
I know she's a Federer fan, but Nadal was up 2-0 in his match earlier today or late last night and went to a tiebreak in the third set, still lost. So Nadal is out, and it feels like Djokovic is going to get his. I believe, 18th slam. Wow. Can you believe that? Federer and Nadal have 20. Djokovic has 17. He'll probably get 18 in the next, like, 4 days.
That's just crazy.
Insanity what's going on over there. And Osaka taking on Serena. That's coming up today. That's going to be an
awesome
match.
Those are tough
hours
at the Aussie Open.
Yes, that's right. Leafs sends tonight. It's going to be a fun one. Enjoy it. The Raptors are back in action tomorrow night at Milwaukee. We'll have that to discuss tomorrow. It's going to be a blast. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We are back tomorrow at
4 p.m. Jerry Crum, PI, will be there.
We'll chat then.
Book 'em.
I love it.